John Waters has a new book out called Carsick, John Waters Hitchhikes Across America. Our producer Doug Gordon did an interview with John Waters recently. And Doug, before we hear that, can we get a little bit of background on who John Waters is? I know he's a really distinctive, flamboyant personality, kind of a cult figure.
Very much so. In fact, he's most famous, Anne, for the cult films he's made. Those films have earned him the nicknames the Pope of Trash and Cecil B. Demented. His black comedy, Pink Flamingos, that he made in the early 70s, it caused a lot of controversy when it first came out because the characters perform a lot of perverse acts in it. And that's probably as much detail as I should go into about that. Or would you like more details?
Well, as curious as I am, it's public radio, so maybe not. So did Waters really hitchhike across America?
He did. Yeah, and he told me that's something he used to do a lot as a kid, and that it was this fantasy he had. Could he hitchhike across America by himself, and what would happen? So 2 years ago, at the age of 66...
Wait, he's 66 and hitchhiking across America?
That's right. 66, 2 years ago, he's 66, hitchhiking from Baltimore to San Francisco, 2,800 miles, and he writes about what happened in the book, of course, but he also writes about what didn't happen, his best-case scenarios and his worst-case scenarios, these fictional accounts. I asked him if imagining these dream rides and nightmare rides was a way of dealing with his anxiety before he left on his trip.
It was hoping and dreading put together, hoping for the best stuff and dreading the worst. And as it got closer and closer, it became more of an abstract idea that what a book deal is than the truth. And I saw the fear in my friends' faces. I saw the kind of reluctance to go along with it with the people that work for me. So, I mean, that started to make me nervous, which kind of got on my nerves because I thought, come on, let's be positive here.
The golden age of hitchhiking is long gone. What happened to it?
I think what happened to it is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre hitchhiker. The Hitcher, the movie. Certainly, I bet there were always serial killers picking up people. I think it was probably always a little bit dangerous to hitchhike, but I think if you hitchhike, the chance of something horrible happen to you, it's much more probable you'll be in a car accident tomorrow than that happening. So everything's a little bit dangerous, and I think the danger of hitchhiking is a little bit of the appeal. It's always like a joke about sex to hitchhike. It's always a joke about danger. It's always the cliches of hitchhiking or genre movies.
The danger, as you say, it's part of the appeal. So I wondered if maybe you had somewhere in the back of your mind this vision of turning hitchhiking into the next big thing in extreme entertainment, you know, along the lines of extreme kidnapping, which people pay to be abducted.
Yeah,
you could have John Waters extreme hitchhiking. You could even hire people to play scary drivers and pick up the clients.
No, I don't want to do that. I did imagine extreme drivers, certainly in the first part of the book, hideous ones. But I don't want to experience that for real. I liked experiencing it in fiction. I was glad that everybody that picked me up was a good driver. I had a cop. I had a coal miner, a trucker, a minister's wife, an African-American girl taking her baby to daycare. I had all kinds of people pick me up. And I would say maybe only a third knew who I was.
Getting back to this idea of the most hideous hitchhiker that you could have was the worst-case scenario of Randy Packard.
Who's a serial killer who only kills cult movie directors. Because everybody said, well, they're serial killers. I said, yeah, I hate to say this, but they usually kill teenage girl runaway hookers, right? And that's a shame, but they don't usually kill 66-year-old men. Even the gay ones, there's one serial killer that was a gay one that just killed, but he went to gay bars and picked them up as a trucker all along the highway. So I tried to think what would be the serial killer that would get me, that would be attracted to me. So I wrote a chapter about Randy Packard, who was, I guess, my ultimate fear. Plus, he had a venereal disease I had never heard of that hadn't been discovered yet. On top of it.
Yeah, to make matters worse. And this would probably be the perfect time to have you read an excerpt from the Randy Packard chapter of your book.
We pull into the Las Vegas city limits. Time flies when you're being tortured. I see the ridiculous skyline of the town, a place filled with tourists I have spent my lifetime trying to avoid. Look, Randy, I groan through spasms of pain. Just let me out here. I promise I won't make any trash films again. I'll go make mainstream movies, I swear. It's too late for a career change, Randy snarls with murderous rage as he pulls his truck off the road into an abandoned drive-in movie theater. It's been a long time since any movies were shown here. There's not even a screen anymore, and the concession stand has been burned to the ground. The few remaining poles for the speakers have been stripped clean of working parts. Randy slams on his brakes with a sickening finality. Get in the back, Randy orders. No, Randy, please, I argue. Let's go see the Avengers. Let's go see Hollywood tentpole blockbusters. His answer bullet into my right foot. I almost pass out when he grabs me and throws me into the opening he has carved between the truck and the trailer he's pulling. Inside is a cult movie director torture chamber. Josie Cotton's cover version of the theme song of Who Killed Teddy Bear is playing on some sort of sound system. Beneath posters for El Topo is the decaying body of Alejandro Jodorowsky, who I thought was still alive until Randy tells me differently and takes credit. I see George Romero's amputated head hanging in a basket surrounded by posters for Night of the Living Dead and all its sequels. Enough is all Randy offers in explanation. Before I can scream, I trip over what appears to be a corpse clawed away by wild animals. Randy kicks it, and I realize this poor human is still alive. I try to look away, but Randy grabs my head in a chokehold and forces me to gaze upon this nauseating face. Oh my God, it's Herschel Gordon Lewis, and he chuckles when he sees me. He's still got a sense of humor, even as he approaches death.
Excellent reading, thank you. You write about these dream rides, the best case scenarios. Do you have a favorite dream ride?
Well, I guess the first one, the one that picks me up and gives me $5 million to make the movie I've been trying to make in cash and tells me that there won't be any notes and he doesn't really care if he gets his money back or it makes money. And he's a pot dealer that has a corrupt FedEx office that's manned by people that look like they've escaped from the Whole Foods employee jail.
Yeah.
You know that look.
Oh, I know that look. So let's talk about reality now. We have to talk about signage. You wanted to go old school, cardboard signs. Why?
Well, it works. I think it's your ad campaign. Although people think you're a beggar, because the only time they see anybody now with a cardboard sign is when you were standing at a red light begging money. So they, I thought I was so stupid or so schizophrenic that I didn't know that you should stand at red lights. Like, how would I collect change down on the entrance ramp? Like, people run by and hold a basket and they throw quarters at me. That would have been good. I should have tried that.
Should have, yeah. Next time.
The human toll booth. No, set up my own toll booth and see if it worked.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you wrote different things on the signs. Which worked best?
I found out the humor didn't work. I had one that said, I'm not psycho. And people laugh, but they didn't pick me up. And my job is not to warm up the crowd on their way to work in the morning in their cars. You know, it was a comedy routine.
No.
I'm writing a hitchhiking book that never worked except for cops. That kept cops away. If I saw a cop, I'd pull that one out. And they didn't pull over much. The ones that worked best are just I-70 West. It was a long distance, but it wasn't impossible. I started in Baltimore with a sign that said San Francisco. People just laughed when they saw it. Because and I don't know what would have been horrible if the book of one person had picked me up and said, I'm going to San Francisco. Get in. It would have been a very dull book. I would have had to jump out. I would have had a scaper ride, which could be good.
Yeah, and do the whole roll, the stunt double roll.
Yeah, the stunt double. I do that in the negative chapters when a junkie hag picks me up and throws me out.
Did you have a strategy if you didn't like the looks of someone who stopped to pick you up? Would you say thanks but no thanks? Or is that a breach of hitchhiker etiquette? Or did that never even happen to you?
Well, it never happened to me. But before you leave, you think, well, would I get in a car with, you know? And but the answer is once you're out there for 10 hours, you would get in with anybody. Freddy Krueger, that hitchhiker, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre hitchhiker with a birthmark on his face. I would have gotten in his car.
Ted Bundy even wearing the sling.
Yeah, in a Volkswagen. Yeah, I'd get in anything.
Yeah. Of course, as you and I both know, you are John Waters, the titan of transgressive filmmaking, celebrated author, provocateur.
Well, thank you. My father didn't call me that.
No, not in front of you anyway. But this begs the question, did people recognize you?
Some did, but a lot of them drove past me and said, well, is that John Waters? Why would it be him? Why would he be standing here? And just like I had a friend that read about it on the internet when the story leaked and called my office and said, so John's had a nervous breakdown. Well, I will come and get him wherever he is in the country. Just tell me and I won't ask him any questions and I'll bring him home. Thought that I had just lost my mind, which I hadn't quite. Some people came over to give me money. A lot of people thought I was just homeless. And then some would recognize me then and start laughing and screaming and wanting to do photo shoots and everything. A lot of people didn't know who I was. And I'd try to tell them if they asked me. One farmer I knew, he didn't believe me, just took out his wallet and tried to give me $10. And I guess that was because he didn't believe me, not that he saw the grosses of my last movie and was trying to help me in my movie career.
One of the major characters in Karsak, besides yourself, of course, is the Corvette Kid. Can you tell me about him?
He was a Republican elected official. I think he's not anymore. I hope this didn't have anything to do with it. Who was in the pouring rain in Western Maryland, my third ride. He was going to the subway shop to get his lunch. And he picked me up. He didn't know who I was. I told him he had never seen any of the movies. None of heard. We just kept talking, and he drove me to Ohio, which was 4 hours away, and his parents were freaking. And then he went home, and then he kept saying, I'm going to come get you again. I thought he was kidding, and I'm getting stuck in Kansas, getting stuck in Ohio, hitchhiking, and taking days. And finally, I get this ride to Kansas. He said, you're kidding. I've been driving 48 hours at 80 miles an hour, and I almost caught up to you. And I thought, is he kidding? You know, so I said, well, meet me in Denver. And I thought maybe still he was home on his computer, that the whole thing was just kind of like a hacking exercise. But he was there. We had a great adventure. We went over the Rockies. It was totally innocent, but people were incredibly perplexed by it, including his friends, who said things like, way to go. You're with a gay man in a hotel in Reno. What's going on here? And his parents were, I think, very freaked out by it, because if you're worried about your son running off with a hitchhiker and you look me up, it's not great, you know, from a parent's point of view. My career is not exactly who you want your kid to run off with. But it was totally innocent, and we just thought it was funny, kind of, that people were reacting so crazily.
Yeah. Throughout your adventure, you found yourself, as you say, creating these strange backstories for the people you encounter or would see, and you actually wonder, why do I have to turn everybody into a tawdry character? And that thought really struck me, because it makes me wonder, why do you have to do that?
Because I'm a writer. That's a writing exercise. I sit in airports and watch a plane debark, and I make up an instant 30-second biography of each person as they walk out of the plane. That's a writing exercise. Because a tawdry character, they could be the hero or heroine of my movie, it could be a tawdry character. I always imagine drama and melodrama. And so all the characters that I think up are usually extreme in some ways. And so the real people I met were not so extreme. So that was kind of very eye-opening to me, to get along with people that were, I guess, so-called fairly normal compared to the characters that I write.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you would use the word tawdry. That's such a great John Waters word, because that really does capture it. And as I suspected, that is the key to your creative process.
My mother, when she didn't used to like some people I'd bring home, she always would say, who is that creature?
John Waters is a film director and the author of Carsick, John Waters Hitchhikes Across America. He spoke with Doug Gordon.